I'm speaking today with Mike Anderson, who is running for the Republican nomination for district attorney in Harris County. Mike, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
I worked at this office a long time, about 17 years. I love this office, and I believe that it is broken. And I believe I have the ability to fix it, and I want to fix it.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your background in criminal justice. You said you worked in this office. You've been a district court judge. Right. Tell me a little bit about what you've done.
I was hired by Johnny Holmes back in 1982, straight out of law school. And I was going to go work for a civil firm. And maybe I had clerked for a firm working my way through and thought that was the way to go. And then I interviewed with some folks from the DA's office over at South Texas and realized there was just something special about them. It's kind of like being from Texas. There's just something special. And if they wanted me to work there, I was going to work there. And I even went to another interview with a real good guy from a civil firm, nice man. He was talking to me. I said, look, I'll be glad to, we can finish this interview. You're a good guy. You have a great firm, but I'm just wasting your time because if those people back there will hire me, I'm going to go work for them. And so they called me up right before Thanksgiving, and Ted Bush called me and said, Mike, we'd like to offer you a job if you'd like to come work here. If you need some time to think about it, we'll give you some time. I said, well, Mr. Bush, I can hang up the phone and call you back. I can hang up and call you back next week. I can do whatever you want, but if you'll have me, I'll come today. And he said, well, we don't need you for 3 weeks, but if you'll come, we'd like to have you. So I did.
What did you do in the DA's office?
Started out in juvenile. I was a pre-commitment intern. So I was hired to begin after I'd finished law school, but before I got my bar results. And so I worked in juvenile in Judge Chris Cole's court. Got to try several cases there, and it was good stuff. It was a good place to be. Then went worked my way through the misdemeanor courts after I got my bar results in November, and then just got on the track there at the office. Worked there, made chief in about 3.5 years, and I was the chief in the 230th, Judge Joe Keegan's at that. My first case there was the Mets when they came down to Houston and got arrested at Cooter's.
I remember that.
Okay, yeah. That was. So, it was during that time I did a bunch of investigation on the case and determined there it wasn't what they'd been charged with. They'd been overcharged. And I didn't know what to do, and I thought, you know, I need to go to somebody that is not trying to get promoted, that doesn't have any reason to give anything but a square answer. So I called Johnny Holmes. I went to his house on Sunday night before we're supposed to start jury selection. I said, Johnny, I had a phone call today from some police officers. I've been talking to them for 2 months, and they just told me they had been drinking that night. And I said, you know, and I've looked at this, and a guy was supposed to have been kicked in the groin, an officer. Wasn't how it happened. The guy was bent over planter box. Guy's foot slipped, the defendant, and the back of his thigh hit the officer in the crotch. That's not kicking somebody in the crotch. It just wasn't what it was charged. And I said, I can't go in there and ask these people to convict these guys of this because it's not true. He said, I'll never. And he was sitting there with some kind of water can in his hand. He was just flipping it around. He said, I'll never ask you to try a case you don't believe in. I said, all right. So we worked it out for what it should have been, deferred adjudication on resisting arrest. So it's just a big point. It's something that's important, and I'm being loquacious. Sorry. Anyway, I was chief in 3 different felony district courts. I then went to special crimes, and I spent my last 10 years there. And it was in special crimes, you work with police officers sitting in your office during the day. They may call you and say, hey, look, I need a search warrant, or I've got this situation. What do we do? How do we handle this? Will you sign on for this case? It's going to be a lengthy investigation. Can we be your guy at the office? So it was a great place to be. So, and sometimes you get a call at 3 a.m. They'd say, come on, we got a murder case. We need you. And you just go and get to work with these tremendous homicide cops, you know, that were just like, they were like, and I don't mean to diminish them, but they were like watching fine bird dogs work. They just, you know, they knew what they were doing. They were irreverent. They drank too much. They smoked. They used just god-awful language, but, man, they were good at what they did. So I got to work with them, and sometimes I really feel like I got to help make the case better, And sometimes in a trial, I would think, you know, if I hadn't had that idea, this case wouldn't have been as good as it is. So it was very satisfying.
Okay.
And I did that for the last 10 years that I was there. Then ran for the 262nd and was elected and served there for 12 years. Tried either the most or the top two or three highest number of trials every year. We worked really hard and thought that's what we were supposed to do, so we did. And but had good success also with helping people to kind of turn their lives around. That people that weren't violent criminals and weren't, you know, the typical bad guy, but you could get a hand in it and you could turn some lives around. So it's a good thing. And I was elected administrative judge for the last 2 years I was there over the district courts. And so while there, we got public defender's office done, which people said that will never happen. And we got it done. Mental health court, veterans court. And we had some awful budget problems. And we got everybody in the room together, defense attorneys, prosecutors, and court personnel from the administration. And we hammered out a plan that was going to save us a whole lot of money. And these lawyers were giving up a little bit of money, but we set it up where if they were, they could take an extra case, so theoretically they could make more money. And it wasn't going to hurt representation. So it was one of those things where you just had to do the best you could under the circumstances, and we did.
Now, 4 years ago at this time, the district attorney's office was, I'd say, in a bit of turmoil after the resignation of Chuck Rosenthal and some of the revelations of stuff that had been going on. How would you contrast where the office was then with where it is now?
I think at that point, Chuck's failings were personal failings, and what he did. I don't even know the extent of it all, but I know it certainly gave the office a black eye. But it was kind of confined to him. I mean, everybody pointed at him. What we have now is a situation, and I certainly don't have any ill will toward Patricia Likas. It comes from lack of experience. And if you've never been a prosecutor, if you've never prosecuted a case as a prosecutor, if you've never written search warrants, if you've never done those things I was talking about, done the things that that you do if you've been there 17 years or 10 years or 5 years, it's hard to know what to do. And I think that's the everything that is a problem. There's a function of that. I think there's a lack of leadership, and it's just because there's just been no experience.
So what would be your priorities coming in as district attorney? What would be the things you would want to do differently?
First day, I would call everybody in, probably to the jury assembly room, because that's the only place big enough that I know of over there in this building. And I would tell these people, this is your office. This, you came here, you gave up probably jobs where you could have made a lot more money, and you came here because you wanted to serve people. Doesn't matter how old those people are, doesn't matter how wealthy or how poor they may be, doesn't matter what their religious background is, doesn't matter where they came from. When they come to you and they trust you, when they've been hurt, and they've been wronged, they trust you to try to get them justice. That should be the most important thing that you can ever do. And you know what? If you do everything you're supposed to do and you look up and you find this case ought to be dismissed, then by God, you dismiss it, because that's justice and you've done the right thing. And please understand, if you make a hustle mistake, I do not expect anybody here to not make mistakes. Nobody's perfect, and I least of all. But we need to be doing this for the right reason. I don't have any political aspirations. I don't even have to put my name on the door. I want to be able to go home each day and know that the people in this office know that what they're supposed to do is justice, whatever it means. If you got to come to my house on a Sunday night because you think a case is overcharged, my door's open. Come on. There's got to be a trust that everybody has at that office. And if a guy walks out of the courtroom and he's been given 50 years, he may hate that fact. He may hate the day. He may be actually hacked off at everything he can think of. But if he's honest with himself and he's honest with everybody else, he'll say, well, nobody cheated me. It's fair and square. It's not a victory if you have to do it any other way. And I mean, there's a I think there has to be a calling to do that, to where it's not, you think, oh, I could be off making more money, I could be off doing something else, I could be doing this, that, or the other. Because trust me, I've been there. I thought that's what I was going to do. I was going to leave that office after my 3-year commitment and go be a rich lawyer, and it just wasn't in the cards, and it was never going to be, you know? It's just, what's even more satisfying, and let them know you're going to have complainants that are going to come in, and they may not be the nicest people. They may not trust you. They may not like the system. They may think you're just, you know, you're just some lockstep individual that wants to convict everybody, and they just don't have any faith in you. Those are the people you need to spend extra time with, and let them know, and just ask them to trust you, and ask you to watch, ask them to watch you, and let you do your job. And make them understand. I mean, sometimes you're going to try a case where you're going to lose. You know, you got an or you got an indecency with a child where a kid's touched through their clothes and there's no physical evidence. And that kid's mother or girlfriend mother or aunt or whoever she may be living with, and the boyfriend who's the one that's charged is the meal ticket for that woman, and she will not stand by the kid. Sometimes the only thing that kid will ever get is somebody that will stand up in front of a jury and put their name on the line, and they've done all their work, and they know it's a weak case. Not that it didn't happen, not that you're trying to convict somebody who didn't do it, but just for whatever reason, the evidence just isn't so strong. It's an 11-year-old kid testifying against a 30-year-old man. And that 11-year-old kid, if she can take away from that courtroom that this person who she's grown to respect and admire over the time they've spent together preparing the case will stand up there and put her name on the line for that kid, that will give that kid something forever. Somebody believes me. Even though this woman who's in my house doesn't believe me, somebody believes me. And you know, that's a huge step in recovery. And I want people to understand that's a victory, man. You know, you gave that kid something. So, I'm going on, but I want them to understand that's what justice means to me. Okay. That's what doing your job means.
Now, you've had a couple of public disagreements with policies that DA Lykos has implemented. For example, the policy of not prosecuting as felonies, you know, some minor drug cases, right, crack trace cases. What is your rationale for that?
Well, first of all, this all started out with not prosecuting cases where you had a glass crack pipe that was destroyed, or Brillo pad that maybe had some residue in it. Well, really, there were some evidentiary issues. And also, there's case law that says if a field test, which they do, the swab where it turns blue, and officers can rely on that for probable cause at a scene, but that is not sufficient to uphold a conviction. Well, okay, understandable. But it has broadened into less than a gram is a lot. There's a wide range between zero and a gram. And so officers have complained to me that they thought this was, you know, this was sold to them early on. They were going to test this for 6 months. And so they tell me that at first they thought, well, it's kind of cutting into, you know what we do, and we think it's, but we'll give it a shot. Well, and they've said it's broadened to where it's really cutting down on their ability to make drug cases. I mean, for instance, you look at the, you know, I said, well, wait a minute, you don't want some piddling case that you can't make in court. No. But, and I talked to a narcotics captain. Okay. And he said, what's happening is, we're not getting cases taken where there's plenty of drugs to test, and it's under the guise of this policy, and we can't make a case on a guy to say we see a guy smoking crack. He goes up to a guy. We're undercover in a van. We know there's a dope dealer on the corner. Guy walks up to him, gives him some money. We know because he's got binoculars. He hands him a bill. He hands him a rock. He smokes it right there. He goes over and sits under a tree for a while and enjoys his high. We should be able to threaten him with arrest. Maybe not to arrest him, but at least to get to the dealer. You know? And they're saying that can't happen under this. So The fight is really with them. I understand the police officers under the fight is between the police officers and the DA. I understand the police officer's point of view, and if they brought a case to me under those circumstances, the law says it's against the law, I'd prosecute it.
You know, FBI crime stats show that crime has been down, though, during the time that this policy's been in effect. So what's the problem?
Well, crime's down everywhere. And, you know, you can ask the experts why that is. Some people say it's the economy. I'm glad crime's down, no doubt about it. But if you look at the numbers out of 2010, officers will tell you, and they told me, and they pointed this out to me, look at the stats. From 2009 to 2010, there were 596 fewer felony drug delivery cases filed in Harris County, Texas. And they tell me it's because they can't run up the ladder using these, use the users to then go after the dealers. And I mean, I don't want to misquote, but back in 2010, there were 596 fewer felony drug delivery cases filed in Harris County, Texas, and they tell me it's because they can't run up the ladder using these users to then go after the dealers. And I mean, I don't want to misquote, but back in, let's see, well, you can see right here, this is an article where Pat Likas is interviewed by Brian Rogers, and it talks about Mike McSpadden and that group trying to change the legislation. These were judges who didn't agree with the law, and they were going to the legislature to change it. The legislature didn't change it, didn't get out of committee, so they came back and did their job as judges. That's the law. We'll follow it. Now, we're smart on the other end. We get people treatment. We don't just throw people in jail, and the law says if you are arrested with less than a gram, you automatically get probation for your first offense. You can put a gun to the head of the police officer and tell him to take you to prison, and he can't because the law says you automatically get probation. So it gives us a chance for treatment. But if you see this, let's see. Yeah. If you look at this right here, it says, Likas also pointed out that any drug user contributes money to criminal empires, including drug lords in Mexico and terrorists worldwide. Anyone who uses illicit drugs has blood on their hands. Now, and right here it says, she said she was looking at the big picture. Misdemeanors could still help involve jail time, which wouldn't help jail overcrowding, and that small drug arrests lower other crimes in neighborhoods. So, I think there's some common ground there. You know, I don't think that the police and
well, let's talk about jail overcrowding, since that article mentions it. As you know, Harris County has had problems over the years with jail overcrowding. It's only just recently the case that we've stopped shipping inmates, you know, to Louisiana and other counties. And certainly part of that is the result of fewer low-level drug arrests. I mean, there are other issues, of course, you know, involving bail and work release and so on and so forth, but low-level drug arrests are a part of that. As someone who has, you know, fiduciary duty to the county as well, how does the DA balance that?
Well, first of all, the DA has no control over the jail. That's the sheriff. The district attorney is charged with enforcing the law. Now, and actually you take an oath that says if probable cause exists to believe an offense was committed and it is presented to you, then you must prosecute that case within the bounds of ethics, the law, so forth. So you take an oath to do that. And so, I think you can do what you're talking about without stepping across the line of merging your agency with another. You can just be smart on the other end of things. Get these people treatment. I mean, that's just a common sense approach. And let me tell you, I was a drug court judge, and these guys would come through my court, and they'd first come in there, and they didn't even look like they were alive. They were just existing, living under a bridge, eating out of a garbage can, no shoes. A guy one time told my wife, who's a drug court judge, if I can just get some shoes, Judge, I believe I'll be all right. Now, that's a human decency thing. And the guy was not violent. He'd never been violent. He'd probably stolen before because that's just what – they don't have jobs. They're all consumed by these drugs. And, I mean, I don't throw the word evil around, and these drugs are evil, and they take these people. And when they tell you something, they believe it. They're not lying to you, but they have no more chance of doing it than I have of flying around this building. But you get them in treatment, they get their lives back, and they get jobs – and they become humans again. They reconnect with their families. They get jobs. They get apartments. They start paying taxes. They put back. You don't just stack them up in jail. That's bad common sense.
Okay. You've also been critical of the DIVRT program, which is intended for first-time drunk driving offenders. What's your issue with that?
Well,
how would you change it?
Well, there's a lawful way to do that. Do pretrial diversion. The difference is, and you can look at some numbers that are being that have been compiled, it's been about 3 or 4 months since I looked at them, so they're a little bit off. But at the time, under the numbers of people that had gotten DIVRT, see, for every DIVRT person that gets DIVRT, the district attorney's office gets $160.
And DIVRT, just to be clear here, is about deferred adjudication, correct?
Well, not exactly, because the legislature says there is no deferred adjudication for DWI. You can either have a conviction, 3 days in jail credit for two, and a $100 fine, which a lot of people choose to do because they just choose to do that. They don't go back to jail, and they pay a $100 fine, and they go away. People that need treatment, they can be put on probation. At that point, they have a conviction for DWI, which is not a crime involving moral turpitude. It doesn't mean you're dishonest. It's what it is. Then there's pretrial diversion, which means you get charged with DWI, you come in my court, the lawyer says, you know, good guy, he went to his aunt's birthday party, he didn't drink, he drank a little too much, yeah. So, why don't we reset this case? Basically, it's a long reset for a year. We will have him on pretrial services, will watch over him, or probation, depending on how they've got it set up. But you'll be monitored. Get the same treatment, ankle monitor if need be, AA, make you get a sponsor within 30 days, if those things apply. If not, you tailor it to the person so that they'll succeed. And then in a year, if they've done nothing, everything's fine, the case is just dismissed. And there's no conviction, there's no anything. That's available. That's lawful. That's in the books. And however, in that circumstance, court costs and fines and fees court costs and fees are paid, and the county and the state get money from that. The district attorney doesn't get the DIVRT money.
Okay. So then the difference between that and the DIVRT program
is that the DIVRT program, the county and the state get no money out of it. And I think that the estimate was at the point after 2 years of it, the county, the numbers for the county, and Judge Bill Harmon has these numbers. It's being looked at by some other agencies as well. But I think at that point, to the tune of $3.5 million to the county and $10 million to the state. So and the county and the DA's office got around $600,000.
So it's primarily a cost issue.
Well, that and the fact that they've already said in the 14th Court of Appeals just came out with an opinion that said this is not a listed punishment for DWI. So it's against law. I asked my whole position is the legislature tells me what the law is. The legislature tells me. I enforce it. That's all. Because if I get to where, as an executive member of the executive branch, I can start changing the law, well, where do I stop? You know, because somebody's going to think it's a good idea, no matter what law I change, and somebody's going to think it's a bad idea, and I don't have that power, and I don't want the power to change the law. And really, it's all about safety and getting these folks that do have a drinking problem. It's a drug problem, getting them back on their feet to where they can have a life and where they can contribute to their families. And I mean, I don't know if you know any folks that are suffering with addiction or alcoholism, but they're not happy people, you know. They're not living the life they were put here to live. And so you need to fix that. Or just go to the legislature and say, let us have deferred adjudication for DWI. It was almost passed last time, but there was a contingent from Harris County that apparently was not in favor of that.
Okay. what opportunities do you see to make better use of technology with the district attorney's office? And I also include things like social media and outreach to the public.
There have been tremendous strides made as far as reaching out to defense attorneys, letting them know when cases are docketed, when they need to be there, what's actually set, and so forth. And that's tremendous. Also, I see there's no problem with doing the same thing with defendants. When they make bond, get the information that you need. So not only do they have a sheet that says you need to be back in court on such and such date at such and such time, you also... and everybody has a cell phone. I don't care if you have a car, you have a cell phone. I don't care if you have a place to live, you have a cell phone. So get that information, and if you can set that up so that there's no doubt about it. And it's a great, paper is getting to be a thing of the past. And that would be a great way to go, in my opinion. Also, one of the ways that we experimented with helping the probation department and the huge crowd of people that would come to report. We were letting people, after they had been on probation for our deferred adjudication for a certain period of time, kind of start loosening things up a little bit, let them earn more freedom, and we could communicate with them electronically, not necessarily an ankle monitor, but by email, by text, and keep things going that way. And so you don't have the bodies down there just crowding in at the courthouse. And you can do what you need to be done, do what needs to be done in a smart way without, just going back to the old horse and buggy that we've seemed to have. Sometimes we get in those habits and they're really hard to break. But, try new things and see if they work.
Okay. There is a conviction integrity unit in the district attorney's office that's reviewed some old convictions. Obviously, some places like Dallas County have done a lot with that. Right. What's your view of this unit in the Harris County DA's office, and what do you see for it going forward if you were to elect the DA?
Oh, I think it's, first of all, there has been a unit of that type, the post-conviction writs, around for a long time, and the standing order has always been, if there's a problem with this case, we want to know about it, we want to look at it, we want to make sure. Nobody wants somebody to be in jail for the wrong reason. And so I think it's who am I trying to think of? The lawyer Bob Wyckoff, who's very, very sharp guy, really, really excellent lawyer. And I think I've spoken with him several times about this when I was administrative judge. It's a good deal. I mean, it's a good deal.
Okay. Right. I mean, it's interesting you say, we don't want people in jail for the wrong reason. But it often seems like in a lot of cases where, where an old conviction is being challenged for new evidence or whatever, it often seems like the main obstacle to getting it changed is the prosecutor. I'm thinking, for example, of the Morton case out of Williamson County recently. I mean, the biggest opponent to all that being reviewed was the district attorney. I mean, what's your opinion of that? Do you think that if someone comes forward challenging a conviction and they have evidence, are you going to stand in the way?
No, you need to look at it. Give them a fair chance. I always, when I was a prosecutor, my position was, I've either got you or I don't. Here's my file. Here's my box of notes and everything. Take them, look at them, and if I've got you, I've got you. If I don't, I don't. And that goes on down the line. You have a trust, not just to the victims, you have a trust to defendants as well, to make sure it's fair and square. You don't cheat, you don't lie, you don't cut corners. And certainly you'll make mistakes. Everybody does. But if you make them, own up to them and do the best you can to resolve them.
Okay. All right. Well, when people go to vote in this primary, whenever it winds up being, why should Republican voters vote to make you the nominee for district attorney and not the incumbent?
My qualifications are speak for themselves. I have 17 years experience as a prosecutor under Johnny Holmes. Johnny Holmes has endorsed me. He taught me things that I think ought to be taught to other prosecutors. I have a passion for this. I believe in what happens there. I've given up a perfectly good job as a visiting judge to do this, and I'm not getting paid at all this year because it needs to be done. I offer leadership. I think if you ask any prosecutor there that will talk to you, they will tell you that. I've had so many people send messages to me saying I was going to quit, and then I heard you were running, and I'm staying there. I think the office as it stands now is being run in a way that I do not approve of, and I think if voters know, they would not approve of it as well. They would not approve of it either. There are cases, which I talked to an investigator today, he's been there for 20 years, and said there are cases of lay-down cases that are being held back for some reason, some involving public officials. No, you can't do that. I would not do that. The present administration has never tried a case as a prosecutor, was never a prosecutor before. And there's nothing wrong with criminal defense lawyers. I'm married to one. But that doesn't give you the experience to be a prosecutor. 10,000 police officers have voted no confidence for the first time in the history of Harris County. Good prosecutors, people that you would respect, that you'd be glad to try a case if someone, God forbid, in your family got hurt or you got hurt. People that are right-thinking prosecutors, true hearts, that have left, not because they're going to get more money, not because they need to do this, that, or the other. They left because they can't work there anymore. They're treated badly. They're not treated with respect. If you've never been in that position, if you've never had to work intake so that you could pay your bills or so that you could take your kids on vacation, you don't know what a strain that is. If you've never had to get together all the evidence in a child murder case, you don't have the proper respect for the person that does. If you've never stood up in front of a jury and given it everything you had and been completely ethical and completely passionate in prosecuting a case where a kid was hurt, you didn't have all the evidence, didn't have it on videotape, and lost, you don't have the proper respect for somebody that's done that, that's had the courage to stand up there knowing they were going to get a not guilty, or at least knowing that the case wasn't a lay down. And so I have a servant's heart. I've developed that. I've got a lot more sense than I did when I was growing up, I think. But I honestly and truly have a servant's heart. I have the background, the ability to bring this office back so that people don't have any question about it, so that they don't wonder what will happen to my case if it goes to that place. I want this office to have that standard that gives people no pause, where people have complete faith, where integrity is the catchword, and people understand that justice is what you're after and being fair. Whatever that may be under the facts and the law, that's what you go after. You follow the law, you follow the law, you follow the law.
Mike Anderson, thank you very much for talking to me today.